It's time for JT the Brick.
Raider Nation, unite!
Now it's time to play football.
But now, my gloves are off. I've been waiting for this. Now I'm unleashed. The leash has been off, and it's Raider football a year from now. Next year at this time, can you imagine?
Raider Nation, what's up?
Here's Jacobs behind, over the top, jumps up for the touchdown!
We are not Raider ready, and I'm the Raider guy here. So we gotta get everybody ready for the Raiders every day, especially when it's the season.
JT the Brick.
We're not gonna waste your time. I'm not a comedian on the radio. I'm just talking sports.
Pillaging just for fun.
This is how much work we have to do. This is how excited we have to be. To act like an NFL town, we're trying to get ahead of the Raider vibe as the Raiders are coming.
I ain't messing around. That's it.
I'm okay saying that, right?
Hey, great to hear your voice again, JT.
And now, here's JT the Brick.
Out of the gate, JT with you. Thrilled today. Big, big show. Raider legend Reggie Kinlaw. In a few moments, one of the most undervalued players ever to join that organization, win two Super Bowls, and now lives in Vegas, Reggie Kinlaw. In a few moments, we're brought to you by PT's. You hear me say it every day, right at 4 o'clock, because I try to drive you to the best happy hour in town. It's from 5 to 7. It is from midnight to 2. I'll be at Sierra Gold tomorrow, having lunch with my buddies, my friends at Sierra Gold and PT's. Remember, happy hour coming up in less than an hour. Go to happy hour, watch sports, and drink a cold one. Play video poker. Hang out. Talk. Order off that unbelievable menu and watch sports. Love everything about PTs. Let's get moving here today. The biggest story in sports is a negative story in sports. The Yankees star pitcher, Domingo Germán, was placed on administrative leave a few hours ago on a domestic violence policy incident. That is the breaking news story. He is the stud pitcher, starting pitcher for the Yankees, who has been not good but great all year long. So, despite the lack of a police report detailing the incident, Major League Baseball and the union agreed that the allegations against Germán warranted placing him on a seven-day leave. Reportedly, there was a witness who saw what happened here in front of a woman who was also connected with Major League Baseball. He's 18-4. 18-4 on the year. And he was going to pitch game one or game two for the Yankees in the postseason. So we'll see what happens. I'm a diehard Yankee fan. Not a Yankee fan, diehard. If these allegations are true, get him off the team. Get him off the team and get him out of the organization. We'll let it develop with Major League Baseball. There'll be more on this story, and we'll talk about that. I'm all over the Raiders and what the Raiders have to do, not only to be competitive against the Minnesota Vikings, but win at the Minnesota Vikings. You see, that's what Vegas needs to understand, and we need to all get behind coming up here in the next couple of months. Not next few years. The Raiders are coming here in a few months. It is unacceptable for the Raiders to lose at any point in time. Unacceptable for the Raiders ever to lose. And the Raiders are always competitive. We know that, and they've had one of the great track records in the history of the league. But I don't sit on the radio every day wondering if the Raiders are going to win a game or lose a game, but they better be competitive. And they were competitive against Kansas City. They were competitive last week, but then they were really uncompetitive in the second quarter. The legendary Raiders who come on this radio show always were committed to excellence and always expected to win and dominate. That's what we have to get back to with this team. We love bringing you a Raider legend every week.
The autumn wind is a pirate, blustering in from sea. With a rollicking song, he sweeps along.
JT the Brick brings you the legends of the Raiders organization.
Because there's only one thing that counts, just win.
The autumn wind is a raider, pillaging just for fun. He'll knock you round and upside down and laugh when he's conquered and won.
Just win, baby.
And now, here's JT the Brick.
Reggie Kinlaw is kind enough to join us. Two-time Super Bowl champ. You see him in the community all the time. He's here to help us promote the Raiders viewing party, which is coming up at the Henderson Pavilion early on Sunday. Reggie, thanks for doing this. Really appreciate it.
Hey, thank you for having me, JT.
I can't tell
anything for you.
Thank you. Thank you. I can't tell you how many nights my wife and I are having dinner or watching TV late at night, and we go to the 11 o'clock news, and you're there. You're out at a school. You're out at a Raider fundraiser. You're with the Raider Foundation. How much fun are you having representing the Silver and Black in the Las Vegas and Nevada market?
Oh, it's been a blast. I get a real kick out of going to these little high schools, the junior high schools, doing Play 60 with the kids, because, you know, hey, that's our future right there. And we starting them young being Raider fans.
No doubt about that. And we'll talk about more in the community, and we'll get back to the viewing party coming up here. A little football to talk about, because you were one of the most dominant players up front in Raider history, a two-time Super Bowl champ, and you were able to shed double teams at times. The good news is the Raider defense has stopped the run in the first two games, even though Mahomes got to him big time in the second quarter this past Sunday. Are you encouraged what you're seeing with the Raiders with their front getting to running backs?
Well, I was very impressed with the defense against Denver Broncos. Mm-hmm. And I knew Kansas City was going to be a test for us. And my opinion, the second half, we shut them down. I thought that was a good feeling right there. They coming along. You know, it's early in the season, Jake. And once we start playing together as a team, I think we're going to be okay.
Raider legend Reggie Kinlaw is our guest. You know, Reggie, it's interesting. You played alongside some of the greatest players, Al Zedo, Howie Long, Ted Hendricks. When you look back at breaking the huddle on defense in all those legendary games, it was all about teamwork. Talk about some of your teammates at that time and how confident you were to make plays knowing that you had guys backing you up.
Well, like you said, I played with some greats. Don't forget John Matuszak, yeah, and Dave Brownie. When I first got to the Raiders, I learned how to play as a team, and I knew I was playing with a bunch of superstars. And if I made a mistake, I know they would cover my back. And if they made a mistake, I would cover their back. It was just a great feeling. You know, we had responsibility. You do your job, and the other guy will do his job. And it ended up being a W. Just do what you're supposed to do.
Reggie Kinlaw played for the Raiders from 79 through 84 on some of the greatest teams ever in the history of the NFL. And I love what you're saying there, because it's all about teamwork. I can't tell you how many times I've heard Matt Millen talk about you on the broadcast or just in, mm-hmm, a private moment, because you were getting the double team and you were opening up for him for making tackles at the middle linebacker position. How do you check your ego, Reggie, at the door, knowing if you don't get a tackle and you don't get a sack, but you almost got home, but your teammate makes a great play behind you?
Well, hey, like you said, it's all about teamwork. Yeah. I mean, you know, I myself personally is doing my job up front. I mean, I have had a lot of inside linebackers pat me on the back and thank me for a long career with them, because I'm doing my job. You know, the glory, I mean, you know, you would love to, you know, make all pro and the Hall of Fame and stuff like that, but I look back on the team per se. I mean, we had a lot of Hall of Famers on our defense.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you can't make Hall of Fame. You know, somebody got to do the dirty work. And that's what I consider myself, doing the dirty work. And if it costs a win, costs me to get two Super Bowl rings, that's what I'm there for.
Reggie Kinlaw is our guest, legendary Raider. I knew I was having you on today, so I sent out a text to a Raider executive, and he texts me back and says, JT, he was one of the toughest undersized nose tackles in NFL history. Dominated the Washington Redskins and All-Pro center Joe Bostic with unbelievable quickness. I'm not sure he ever weighed over 250, but he played at the fastest and strongest level. He played a 3-4 when he was with us, and he had to occupy 2 to 3 blockers to free up Millen to make tackles. A great person on and off the field. Unbelievably underrated. We love him. People say that all the time about you, Reggie. You were underrated. That to me is a really big compliment, but as a professional football player, how do you handle when you hear that?
Well, I appreciate the compliment, but I'm just a humble person.
Yeah.
You know, I enjoyed doing what I was doing. I was playing with some of the best football players in the league. And to be honest with you, Jay, I was just proud to be a Raider.
I was
proud to put that silver and black on every Sunday. And it made me feel bad. It made me feel real good to be part of this organization.
How cool is it to be a part of, sign autographs, help MC and host a Raiders viewing party? I know it's not your first one, but now as the Raiders are going throughout the valley to go to the Henderson Pavilion, it's an early start, 10 in the morning, and then make that connection like you like to do with parents and kids and young high school football players. How much do you enjoy that?
I enjoy it a lot. All the people that's listening, the first 1,500 people getting a Raider T-shirt, we're going to have the Raiderettes there. They're going to put on a show. They're going to auction off John Gruden autograph football. So we're looking forward to having a good time. And me and Roy are going to mingle around with all the fans.
Yeah.
And we're going to sit and watch the Raiders kick butt.
Yeah, they need to win this game. Again,
yes,
Reggie, with all the games that you played, your record was so dominant, and you came in after the Raiders won their first Super Bowl. And you feel really blessed, don't you, that you hit the Raiders at the right time when you did to be able to win and to be a champion and just to play under Al Davis. And it was all about winning and getting better even after you won a championship. What was that dedication like for you in the offseason?
Well, to be honest with you, I like you said, I was blessed being at the right place at the right time and with one of the best organizations in the world. Mr. Davis and the Davis family gave me an opportunity. Ron Wolf, he looked at me when I was at Oklahoma, gave Al the sign to draft me. I was a 12th round draft choice. The first thing came to my mind when I got there was that, hey, I'm going to make this team. And once I made this team and just we had this attitude of going to the Super Bowl every year. You know, we wanted to get better every game. Every game you play like it's the last game.
I'm fascinated.
The Super Bowl was always on our list every year.
I'm fascinated that you were a 12th round pick. Was it true because you decided not to have knee surgery coming out of Oklahoma that you dropped that far down? Because we don't think today, because they don't have it, we don't think about 12th round picks. We think about undrafted free agents. Why did you drop and why did that motivate you so much? Because clearly you turned out to be one of the best players in the league.
Well, it was my size, 6'2 and 235 playing nose guard at Oklahoma. And I got up to 245 when I was with the Raiders. And I think it was just, you know, no defensive lineman was that size. You know, they tried to convert me into a linebacker, and then they decided they was going to draft Matt Millen and put Matt Millen, because Matt Millen was a nose guard too.
Yeah.
So they put Matt Millen in, and they started me at nose guard and made Matt Millen a linebacker.
Incredible story. Reggie Kinlaw, as we wrap it up, I want to share this story with everybody. I get a chance to MC the Raiders alumni party every year up in Napa. So my wife and I are coming out of the Napa Marriott, and by that time my son was committed. He was going to Oklahoma, not to play football, but to go to school. And my wife and I are talking, and in the background, you're hanging out with Kenny King, who also went to Oklahoma. You overhear us talking. We start to go back and forth with Lester, and we're talking to you. And the next thing I know, and I've known you guys for a while, but I'm going to know you more and more, all of a sudden you start saying, Boomer, Boomer Sooner, and now I got you two guys in my back pocket as I'm going to Oklahoma in 2 weeks to go to my first game. How excited am I?
Oh, cool. Yeah. So you're going up there.
Yeah, it's Parents Weekend. We're going to Parents Weekend. They're playing Texas Tech
2 weeks. How does he like it?
He loves
it.
He loves it. Well, you know, he's only been there 3 weeks, Reggie. He hasn't come home yet. They haven't thrown him out. He's not calling mom wanting us to pick him up. So we're all good so far.
But that's a good sign. He's been there 3 weeks. Hey, he might not want to come home no more.
I'm hoping he enjoys it and has fun. Hey, it's the Raider viewing party. It is this Sunday, 10 a.m., Henderson Pavilion. I've seen concerts there. I've been there with my kids before. It's an unbelievable venue. We'll talk about all the giveaways all the rest of the week on the show and the opportunity to meet Reggie Kinlaw up person, get an autograph, talk football with him. And we're going to do this a lot more, Reggie. Next time we'll get you in studio, okay?
Okay, thanks a lot, JT.
You got it, buddy. Appreciate it. Reggie Kinlaw, really happy we're able to get him on. So he'll be a part of the whole party going on. If you're a Raider fan and we're connecting with the Raider Nation, head on out. It's a 10 o'clock in the morning start. They're going to open up at 9 a.m., and they have great giveaways, T-shirts. There's going to be food and drink available there. It's the Henderson Pavilion Plaza. And it's fantastic. It's a watch party, appearances by the Raiderettes. They're going to perform there, and it's going to begin at 9:45 in the morning. Raider Rusher will be there, and the Silver and Black Youth Ambassador, the guy who really gets everybody going. It's a lot of fun. Head on out to this unbelievable event. I'll be on the radio double-dipping doing my other job, but I encourage everybody to go down there. It's going to be a lot of fun. Real quickly, John Gruden on this game with the Vikings defense. I've been preaching that all week. We got Rod Woodson tomorrow for two segments, the Hall of Famer. Defense from Minnesota is their calling card.
They have veteran players, and they have high-profile players at every level. It starts with the pass rush. They knock the run out with Linval Joseph and Kendricks, their middle linebacker, and then they get these pass rushers, a lot of at-bats, and they can rip it, man.
The more I look at this game, the more I don't like it. The more I look at how good the Vikings are, the more I don't like this game. Not saying the Raiders can't win, but it would be an upset. They're more than a touchdown underdog. They're on the road in a hostile environment. They're coming off a loss against Kansas City. John Gruden's trying to build a team of his guys who can put a loss behind them, come back and bounce back and win. That's all we want. All you want if you're a Raider fan. Lose a game, okay. The fan base has got your back. Bounce back and win the next game. It's a big Derek Carr game for me. Big one. Because he's going up against Kirk Cousins, who makes $84 million guaranteed. Derek Carr doesn't make $84 million guaranteed. Derek Carr's a better player than Kirk Cousins. So for Carr, he just got outplayed. Fact, not fiction, by Patrick Mahomes. Everybody gets outplayed by him other than Tom Brady. And Carr has got to find a way to win this game. Go do it, Derek. Number four, you just broke Ken Stabler's record in passing yards. Bounce back after a loss and win a game. We're brought to you by the Henderson Hyundai Superstore, Boulder Highway in Henderson. They have the super deals you're looking for. Frank and the entire team down there ready for you. Come on in. Walk the lot. See all the crossovers that they have. Luxury vehicles, SUVs, and, of course, the award-winning Hyundais that you love here in the Valley. I usually don't wrap up the monologue on a serious note, but this is a very serious note, and I'd like to get some reaction from you. The Yankees now have a pitcher who's accused of a domestic violence incident, okay, where he put his hands on a woman allegedly. Very serious question. It's happened to all of our teams, right? Every one of our teams throughout our lifetime. You can name any team, and there's been a player on your hockey team, baseball team, football team, basketball team. One player that has done this. What do you do in your mind when a player does this? Do you want them out? Do you want to rehab them and hope that they get educated? Which is very important. There are people that make mistakes in their early 20s and in their teens, and they have their whole life in front of them. And they make really big mistakes. They get DUIs. They're involved in domestic incidences. They make big mistakes, and they are able to get help and then turn around their lives. But I want to ask you specifically, when was the last time you remember a player on your team that did something really bad and you wanted him out? Because I want this guy out. From what I'm reading, and I love this guy before today. It's a mistake. I want to know where you stand on this. Kick him out and throw him to the curb, or if it's true and he did this, give him a second chance down the road. That's really what professional sports is all about. You're so passionate about your team. You're going to root for your team no matter who's in uniform. Players come and go. But when you got a chance to kick a player out of the organization, are you the fan that wants to do that? Or are you a fan willing to give a second, a third, and a fourth chance? 876-1340, if you have an example of someone who turned their life around and you stood by them, or if you remember having the courage to say, get them out of here. It's bad for our team. It's bad for our brand. I don't want to be associated with them. 876-1340. Craig Ellenport's going to join us at the top of the hour. He has a brand new NFL book coming up on 100 years in the NFL and the 100 greatest moments. He's phenomenal. I worked with him 20 years ago at Sports Fan Radio Network. He's one of the most dialed-in NFL guys that I know out there. Joe Lisi, who gives you three games in college football. He's going to join us a little bit later on in the show. And Dr. Crivetti's coming in. If you need a knee or a hip surgery or a shoulder, Andrew Luck problems, Dr. Mike Crivetti, the best in town, iCanAgain.com. He comes in probably twice a month. Today's his day. We'll talk to him a little bit later on in the show. When we come back, some of the moving lines and what people think about betting a game where there's a 20-plus point spread. A lot of Twitter tough guys out there. They tell you how much they make money. But they're driving around in a 1987 Corolla. Nothing wrong with that. They don't have a website with their track record, and they never tell you when they lose. Or are these Twitter tough guys going to bet the Patriots and the Cowboys? Or are they going to take the opposition and take all those points?
I mean, it's a different kind of challenge. We all know that deep down, Cousins is, he's paid to throw the ball, and he's capable of ripping it. And I've seen him throw for over 4,000 yards, and I've seen Thielen crush people. And Stephon Diggs doesn't mess around either, so we got to deal with it all. We just can't commit everybody to stop the run and give Cousins a lot of good one-on-one looks on the outside. So we got to mix it up. We got to win on first down. That's the name of the game.
It's John Gruden on the opponent, which is the Minnesota Vikings. We're looking for Raider calls and tweets, right? We're looking for Raiders calls and tweets where people react to the game that is coming up and preview it and react to the win or loss on Monday, Tuesday. We're now into Thursday where we're looking for a preview and a prediction on the game. If you're betting the game, do you think the Raiders have a chance? If you don't think they have a chance, I'm fair with that too, but let us know, 876-1340. They had to play a perfect game to beat Kansas City. Perfect. They don't have to play a perfect game to beat the Vikings. Doesn't have to be perfect. Minnesota in their first two games, they were up and down. They were able to run the ball with Dalvin Cook. He's been a superstar, leads the league in rushing. But Kirk Cousins has played poorly. Their defense, which is really good, got buried early by Green Bay, and they struggled getting back into the game. So it's this game to me is going to be about field position, down and distance, and getting to a point. I talked to a really good friend of mine today who's a Raider fan up in the Bay, and he said, you know what I'm sick of, JT? I'm sick of this team not being in the game late. Like, the Kansas City game was over with the whole fourth quarter, and last year when the Raiders were 4-12, there were games that got away from them. But if you go back to the 2016 season when they went 12-4, and I went back and looked at it today, the Raiders played in a lot of games that came down to the final 2-3 minutes. Overtime win, come from behind wins, 3-point games, and they were close, and the Raiders found a way to win it. Now, a few of those games, they could have lost it, but they won, and everything clicked properly. They went 12-4. The problem was Derek Carr broke his ankle, and they didn't have a backup who could play at a high level, and the Raiders went to the playoffs and didn't win a game. That's why Derek Carr's got two really interesting stats going in his career that most people don't want to have. He started his career 0-10, and he's never won a playoff game or played in a playoff game. So for a guy who's been given all that money, you would think he played in the playoff game 3 or 4 times, won a playoff game, lost 2, whatever. Never been in one because the teams that he's been surrounded by haven't been good enough. Derek has been one of the better players on an average to below average team. So John Gruden's trying to get him better players, Mike Mayock, better players. So now we could look at Derek and evaluate him with a good team. So you can either win with him, or if you can't win with Derek Carr with a good team, then you got a problem going forward and you got to make a tough decision. And I don't think we're at that point with Derek Carr where we have to make a really difficult decision. Like, is he coming to Vegas? Would the Raiders package him in a trade? I don't think we're there yet. But Derek's got to find a way to win some of these games to get some of the heat off of him. And the only way Derek's going to win some of these games is you got to be in the game with 10 minutes to go in the fourth quarter. It's like a baseball game. If it's 7-0 in the third, it's probably over. I don't care how good your bullpen is or at the middle of your lineup. You're done. And the Raiders can't have that in Minneapolis. Just get to halftime. Get to halftime with a manageable score, and I think Gruden could put together a game plan to win the game. 876-1340. Ron, thanks for waiting. You're up first. Go ahead.
Hey, what's up, JT? Like, exactly what you said. You know, we've seen all the comebacks. If we can stick around and hang around in the game, DC can you know, he can make stuff happen. But we cannot get down. We got to feed Josh Jacobs the ball. Hopefully, I don't know if Trent Brown will be playing, but that's going to be huge if he's not, because I don't really trust Brandon Parker.
Well, Greg Olson spoke to the media today, and he said, I think he's good to go.
Okay.
I don't think he would have said that if he wouldn't play. I think Trent Brown, which is a shame. He's the highest paid offensive lineman of all time. They need him healthy. He's a big guy. Big guys tend to get hurt because they're so big. They have big medical problems. But he was healthy last year on a Super Bowl championship team, and he's got to get right quickly. We don't want to see Trent Brown limping around and coming off injuries every 2 to 3 games. He's a big part of what they're trying to do.
Exactly. So this line just needs to get healthy. You know, with Incognito back, I'm sure that'll help out a lot. So hopefully him and Trent, you know, will be pulled. I know Incognito will be playing, but hopefully Trent won't be there for sure, like you said. But this defense has to, you know, they gotta do something. Conley got burned. Trayvon Mullen was getting lit up. The pass rush just needs to – they need to make stuff happen. They need to get in Cousins' face and make him uncomfortable. He can run, but if they – like Al Davis says, the first 5 to 6 plays the quarterback must go down, he must go down hard, and that needs to happen.
Yeah, thanks for quoting Al Davis. Appreciate the call. Excellent phone call. You covered it all right there. Appreciate it. 876-1340 is the number as we continue on. Knocking the quarterback down is not a cliche. It's really important. But in the league now, what's changed in this league – is that you're not allowed to touch the quarterback, not allowed to get near him if you put your pinky on him. Denver lost a game that they should have won. Chubb tackled the quarterback, tackled Mitchell Trubisky. It was just a tackle. It's called a sack. Back in the old days, I always say this in studio, I have a Deacon Jones jersey. He used to slap people in the head. Came up with the thing called the head slap. He would come around the edge and slap a guy so hard in the helmet that his ear would ring, and then Deacon would sack the quarterback. And Deacon... came up with the term, and Deacon did, sack the quarterback. Now, if you tackle the quarterback, it's 15 yards. And if you touch Tom Brady, watch this the next time you watch Brady. If you touch him, Brady immediately looks to the ref. Wait a second, Tom. What's the problem? The guy just fell and leaned up against you, and Brady's like yelling, he wants a flag. Drew Brees got hurt in the last game because his hand hit Aaron Donald. Ben Roethlisberger hurt his elbow because it just got old. He threw the ball, and he had an elbow issue. But quarterbacks need to be protected in this league. And that gets me to the Eli Manning debate today. A lot of people are saying stupid things about Eli Manning the last couple of days, that he's not a Hall of Famer, and he was an average quarterback. Say what you will about Eli Manning in the regular season. His career record, 116-116. But he was epic, epic in the postseason. He has a winning percentage of .667. He knocked Aaron Rodgers, Brett Favre out of the playoffs, both of them, and beat Tom Brady twice in the Super Bowl. That means you walk into the Hall of Fame, they hand you your gold jacket, and you don't need to vote. They'll vote for him, and I'm sure there's going to be people who vote against him. So the Giants are going with a new quarterback, Daniel Jones, coming up here on Sunday, which I'm okay with. I'm an Eli fan, but I think it's time to turn the page. And Pat Shurmur knows that he's got to get this young kid in there to give him some reps.
Daniel Jones is ready to play, and we're going with him. And the reason I say that is because we do everything we can to win football games, and at this point we feel like he's the guy we want to move forward with.
I love that. I like it or not, that's a strong soundbite from that head coach, because he's dealing with the New York media, which is a little bit different than the wink, wink Vegas media. It's New York. There are more wolves at the door. There are more jackals at the door of the locker room when it opens up. And Shurmur was ready to talk about this because he had to make a big decision to sit down an iconic player. That's not easy to do.
I think about all this stuff all the time. But when the game was over, you know, and again, it's not all about Eli. It's about there's other factors involved, you know, our team, where we're at, and moving forward. But, you know, certainly the most of the thought for me happened after the game.
Tampa Bay is hosting the Giants coming up on Sunday. Line opened up, Tampa Bay -4. It's now -6.5, depending on where you're shopping on the strip. That's a big number there. 6.5, and it could move to 7 by game day from what I'm hearing. Keep an eye on that. I think the Giants are going to rally around Daniel Jones. It's just very difficult to handicap a game, even if you're a professional handicapper, when you've never seen a guy play a professional game. Right? Daniel Jones never played. He played in the preseason. How is he going to play in a regular season game? No one knows. And then we'll start building up some stats, and we'll get an idea of how he plays. So the two games I mentioned going into this segment, Dallas is a 22.5-point favorite over Miami. This is interesting to me because I think Miami, the players who are going to stay there and they want to keep their jobs and they want to fight for Brian Flores, the head coach, they got to play their ass off in this game. And it's a road game, and I think that's good for them because I think them getting out of Miami will be good because they can focus on the road and they're playing in Dallas, in the Palace. And they're going to want to play because a lot of people watch the Cowboys. I think Dallas will win that game, but Miami will cover the spread. And then we move to the other big game with the New England Patriots as they take on the Jets. And a lot of people are trying to figure out how to bet this game. Initially, came out at one point. I looked at it. I couldn't believe it. Going back to when the original line came out, New England and the Jets, it's now 22. 22 points for New England. Now, if Sam Darnold was the quarterback, what would the point spread be? And a sharp told me 14 to 17. It would be somewhere in there. But the fact that they're not on their second-string quarterback, they're on their third-string quarterback, New England is laying 22. I think New England will win and cover because I think New England and Belichick loves to bury the Jets, and I think they're going to go up by halftime by double digits, and then they don't take Brady out of the game. That's what's crazy. Bobby, you're a lifelong New England Patriot fan. I mean, it's got to amaze you when they don't take Brady out of games when they're up 30, when they're up 21 with 4 minutes to go in the game. And Tom Brady's in the shotgun with 4 minutes to go. He's in the shotgun, and you're up 3 touchdowns.
God, I wish we did TV. But I wish people could see this.
Well, the vein's coming out of me. It's crazy.
Let me tell you something, right? The reason why he's still in there is because he wants to still be in there.
I get
that. If he walks up to Belichick, and Belichick goes, okay, you're sitting down, and then Brady has a fit. Guess what? He's going back in.
I get that, but all it takes is someone to roll up on his ankle or his knee and knock him out, and the Patriots have zero chance. They go from almost 100% chance to zero to win the Super Bowl. So I think they're really cocky about that, but you make a good point. Brady doesn't want to come out of games. Never wants to come out of game. It's a pride thing. It's a pride thing, and he thinks that he can manage the game. And he's been really lucky that he only got hurt once. And going back to Eli for a second, Eli's never been hurt. So I tweeted this out earlier today at JT the Brick, and I think this, when it comes to Eli, if you want to call in on that, is that Eli's got a big decision to make now. He's young. He's young. He's not old. He's never been hurt. Doesn't have a bad bone. He doesn't have bad knees. He's been healthy. Why wouldn't Eli want to play for a new team over the next 2 years? Jacksonville, pick the team, whatever it is. I think Tennessee's the best fit. Because I think Tennessee is going to get out of Marcus Mariota, and Eli and Peyton were close with Tennessee and the ownership. But let's say Eli wants to play. Where would he go? We'll know next year. But the bigger issue is, does he have enough pride to walk away? Just walk away and say, hey, I got my kids, I got my wife, I'm healthy, I'm going to the Hall of Fame, the Giants are going to retire my number, and I don't want people to remember me playing somewhere else. I think he's the guy to do it. Derek Jeter did it. Eli can do it, but most can't. Franco Harris in Seattle. Emmitt Smith in Arizona. Because it's very difficult to tell an athlete he's done because there's so much pride, they think they can go another year or two. There's no doubt in my mind that Eli can play another year or two, but the question is, what's the fit? He's got to go to a team that can win. And most teams that are close to winning already have an established quarterback. We're brought to you by Grimaldi's, the best pizza in town. You could always have a Grimaldi party. It's the home of the $50 gift card. I'll be giving out a $50 Grimaldi gift card tomorrow on the show in between our conversation with Hall of Famer Rod Woodson, who came in studio with me. You don't want to miss that tomorrow. When we come back, our college football insider, Joe Lisi, who always gives you games. It's easy to get it out of him. All I say is, Joe, who do you like in this game? He tells me. If you're gambling on college football, you do not want to miss this. Joe Lisi, Go for the Two, joins us weekly, and he'll give you a couple of predictions coming up next.
There's the snap. Ball's down. The kick is on the way, and the kick is no good! He missed it, and time has expired! And Arizona State, with a stunning 10-7 upset of heavily favored Michigan State in East Lansing this afternoon. Oh, my goodness!
That was a good game. I heard Herm Edwards on the radio. On satellite radio today, he was still sky high on that. Joe Lisi joins us. Go for the Two. We're fortunate to have him here every week. Joe, good to have you again. We'll jump right in. Kind of a shocking win for Arizona State, or more to be expected of that with the coaching staff and the way they have a quarterback that can make plays.
Yeah, I agree, JT. Thanks for having me. I think Arizona State's legit in the Pac-12 because of their physicality. On the defensive line, they have a big play defensive end and linebacker Robertson. They're physical at the point of attack, and they play like a Big Ten team. So as long as they get solid quarterback play out of Jaden Daniels and, more importantly, the rushing attack with Eno Benjamin, I think they'll be in each and every ball game. They're a team to keep an eye out for Pac-12 play.
Southern Cal, since JT Daniel went down and the injury, next man up, they got good quarterback play. But now people are wondering if other teams are going to see tape and figure them out. A big test for Utah on the road. It opened up a pick 'em, and now it's Utah -4, -3.5 compared to where you're at. How do you see that?
Yeah, I actually like USC in this ball game. They've won the last three games in the Coliseum by an average margin of victory of 11.6 points per game. Utah hasn't won a game in USC since 1916. So I really think they can challenge Utah's defense over the top, even though they lost that matchup to BYU on the road. I thought they played well. They moved the football, just didn't make enough plays. I like USC plus the 4 points. I also like them on the money line tomorrow night.
Syracuse, the team we've been talking about, the letdown against Maryland, obviously what happened against Clemson. I mean, the whole season seems like it was built up just to be torn down. I know you know this Western Michigan team. Syracuse opened up a 4-point favorite. Now a line jumped to 5, 5.5. How good is Western Michigan on the road at the Dome?
I think they're a live dog in this matchup. This is one of my best bets for the weekend. Line opened up around 4. They bet it up to 6.5. It's down to around 5. But this is a balanced offense. They're rushing for over 200, passing for over 200 with Wasnik and Bellamy. I think they can challenge that Syracuse defense. Keep in mind as well, Syracuse is not running the football with DeVito at the helm. It's a different offense. They're only averaging 92 rushing yards per game, and they can't shut down the run consistently. They're giving up 190 rushing yards entering this matchup. I think Western Michigan's a live dog. They're a speed team. They're not going to fear Syracuse in this ballgame. They lost this matchup at home last year by 13 points as a 4.5-point underdog. I think they win this ballgame outright in the Carrier Dome.
Joe Lisi, a must-follow, at Go for the Two. Anything you need with in regards to preview, analysis, predictions on the game, at Go for the Two, it's all right there. You know Georgia as good as anybody I've talked to on the radio for the last few years. Notre Dame's got to feel pretty disrespected going in between the hedges, catching 14.5.
Yeah, I mean, this is a Notre Dame team since 2015, JT, that's played very well on the road or on a neutral field site. 16-10-1 overall, that's a 615 winning percentage. Since last year, Notre Dame is 7-1 on the road and have won those games by right in the area of about 21 points per game. I think they can move the football on Georgia. I know Georgia has the more physical offense and defense lines, but I'm still not sold on the passing attack with Jake Fromm. Keep this in mind as well. Georgia is 24-0 since 2016. Every time they pound the rock for over 200, they've rushed for over 200 in all three ballgames this year, but they've won those 24 games by an average margin of victory of 28.8 points per game. I think if Ian Book strikes fast and puts the pressure on Jake Fromm in that offense to match them score for score, I think they could be in this ball game from start to finish. I think Georgia wins, but I do feel that Notre Dame covers this number Saturday night in Athens.
Joe Lisi is our guest. UCLA for Chip Kelly. Not a lot of people in Southern California feel sorry for him because there's a lot of USC fans there, and he understood what he was getting, especially the money he was getting. But the Wolves are at the door. I mean, there are alumni. There are boosters. They were giving away tickets, Joe, to that Oklahoma game. Season ticket holders for UCLA were given 4 additional tickets, and no one showed up. Now they're away at home at Washington State, and they're an 18.5-point underdog. Is Chip Kelly going to make it to the end of the year?
He might not, and I said it at the start of the year in my preview. I picked UCLA right in the area of 4-8. I didn't think it was, you know, a quick turnaround because of the lack of physicality on the defensive line. Last year, they couldn't stop the run. They can't stop the run this year, and their secondary entering this contest is giving up well over 250 yards per game. But sometimes when you go on the road and get away from home, you play a little bit better. I backed them last week. They didn't cover that number. This is the last week I'm backing them. I think Washington State does win this ball game, but I think UCLA does keep it within the 18-point number because they're away from home. This is a make-it-or-break-it game to turn around the season and possibly get to a bowl game.
We're wrapping it up with Joe Lisi. Joe, I know you got another play for our audience. They really appreciate the fact that you give us your opinions and the winners here. Auburn, Texas A&M, I look at this game. That line opened up 2.5 for Texas A&M. Now it's 3.5. I just want to know what you think overall about Auburn's play as they opened up the season with a big event, a big moment now. Has there been a letdown for them? Do you think they're going to be playing better in the next couple of weeks?
I don't think they're going to be playing better. I mean, I credit Bo Nix for what he did week one against Oregon. I thought they were outplayed in that ballgame. And they've won 3 of the last 4 against Texas A&M by an average margin of victory of 10.3 points per game. Picked up this victory 28-24 last year with Jarrett Stidham leading a fourth quarter comeback. But here's the matchup that I see playing out. Since 2014, Auburn is 15-16 on the road or on a neutral field site. And Gus Malzahn on against AP competition during that span, just 7-13 overall. That's only a 350 winning percentage. He's got a true freshman making his first true SEC road start. And when you look at the A&M front seven, giving up only 83 rushing yards per game, I think they have the better head coach in Jimbo Fisher and the better quarterback in Kellen Mond. I think Texas A&M runs away with this matchup 14 points or more over Auburn this coming Saturday.
Wow. So you got him. They're hammering Auburn. Auburn's got one of the best fronts in football, and you say that no problem. They're going to bury him.
Yeah, I think it comes down to the quarterback play in this matchup, JT.
Yeah.
I mean, Bo Nix is only completing 52% of his passes. You have a quarterback in Kellen Mond that's a mobile quarterback. And if you watch that ball game last year on the plains in Auburn, Auburn struggled with the screen attack of Travion Williams. I think Isaiah Spiller can be utilized in the short to intermediate passing game. Playing at home in Kyle Field with that fan base and with that crowd behind them, I think Texas A&M, it might be close early, but the speed of Texas A&M on the perimeter is the difference. I think they force some turnovers and win this ball game comfortably in this matchup.
Joe, one more, just a general college football question. Tim Tebow almost broke the internet when he passionately expressed his thoughts on the California Senate passing a bill allowing student athletes to have endorsements. I love what Tebow said. Now, I'm all for paying athletes, and you got to have it across the board, and you got to pay the women because you'll be in court with Title IX and all that. But did you respect, because you've covered Tebow's career, did you respect his passion on that topic, and do you agree or disagree?
I do respect his passion. I mean, that's the one thing about, you know, covering the game of college football is that we're all passionate about it. It's different than the NFL, and that's what separates it. It's not a professional league. I do feel that the players should be compensated in some capacity, but in the end, it's for academics as well. I know the type of revenue that they bring in, but they're there to get an education first. I understand the revenue dollars and the ability to move on to the NFL, but a majority of these players, JT, do not make it in the league, so we have to compensate everybody in that regard.
Thank you, Joe. What are you working on this week? What's going on the website? Where can everybody find you?
Yeah, they can find me at Go for the Two. I'm working on breakdowns for this coming Saturday. I'll be covering 6 hours in the Meadowlands in New Jersey, and then Sunday I'll be with Sid Rosenberg in the city.
You got it, buddy. Take care. We'll talk to you next week.
All right. Have a good one.
You got it, Joe. Joe Lisi, Go for the Two. Fantastic work there. So the big takeaway from Joe, the game that everybody's talking about, he likes Notre Dame to hang around in that game and have a chance to just keep it close and cover the spread. That's big. And then I almost fell out of my seat when Joe, because we asked him, Joe, what games you want to give us? And he gave us two. And he told us that Texas A&M game. And I'm looking at it against Auburn, and I'm like, wait, why is he so big on this? Texas A&M is a 3.5-point favorite. He says they'll beat Auburn by 14-plus points because of the quarterback play in that game. I'll remember that. Bobby, I don't remember a lot of things over the weekend for two reasons. One's on purpose, because my brain only has so much room to remember things. So I got to remember my wife and my kids and my life and my mortgage and my family. So I don't want to remember college football lines. I have no interest in them. I'm not interested, but our audience is. So I try to give them the information. But I don't sit at home on a Saturday at 8 o'clock at night going through my phone wondering who won by 3 or 10. It doesn't move the needle for me.
It's okay. We tape everything here. So anything anybody says, we've got it. No problem.
We got it. So thanks to Joe Lisi for all that help. Craig Allen Port has a book out, The 100 Greatest and Most Significant Moments in NFL History. Incredible. Number 23, Joe Montana, Super Bowl 23. Number 36, new rules to create more offense back in 1978. Number 11, Pete Rozelle becomes the commissioner. This is a great book. We'll get into it next.